This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.
It's episode 200. The boys will drone on and on, bringing you the latest UAV news and so on. Congratulations, Max and David, on your 200th episode of the UAV Digest.
That's right. You're listening to episode 200 of the UAV Digest. And I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I can't stop laughing. And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Happy anniversary, Max.
That's right. That was Drone Mama on her ukulele. And I have to tell you, David, she wrote that, sang it, and played the ukulele about 30 minutes ago. She put that together. So thanks to Drone Mama for that.
I guess we're wasting her talents.
We might be. We absolutely might be. So thanks, Drone Mama, for doing that. That was kind of wonderful. Well, David, we're at episode 200. And this time, I guess we want to kind of reflect back a little bit on how we got started, where we got started, where we've been, and maybe where we're going or where we think we may be going in the next 100 episodes.
And should we be honest that this isn't our 200th episode?
Well, technically, you're right, because we had an episode zero. I'm not exactly sure what the logic was back then. Maybe it was we weren't sure if this was going to work or something. I don't know, David, but
I think the real reason was you and I wanted to figure out if we could actually do this together. And it also gave us the necessary ingredients so we could program it and get it uploaded into iTunes.
That's right. Yes. And that was back in August 9th, actually, in 2013. A short episode. It's only about 18 minutes. But in that first episode, in that episode zero, we introduced ourselves. You remember, David, we defined some terminology because
we didn't know what we were talking about.
We kind of didn't. Are they UAVs? Were they drones? Were they RPVs? What's a UAS?
Now remember, we weren't supposed to use the D word.
We, in fact, talked quite a bit about that because back in those days, it had really bad connotations amongst many people because of the association with military drones is kind of where that came from. But it did take up a lot of that episode, our conversation about that. I don't know if you remember, David, but here's one little clip from there. All right, the first story comes from Breaking Defense. This is titled, "Don't Say Drones, Beg Drone Makers." They mentioned that to the public, the word drone has a bad connotation. It means military and death to a lot of folks. Of course, we're inundated with stories in the news about drone strikes, and so that has a kind of a bad connotation to it. David, do you think the industry can change the word and change the perception?
I don't know. I mean, the article does cite one of my biggest pet peeves that no matter what UAV you're talking about, you end up getting a predator as the photograph at the top of the article. And actually, one of the things they said in the article was that when they show someone or ask them what they picture is a drone, they actually come out with a predator because it's been so ingrained by the mass media that is a drone, and it's tough. The article goes on to say that while everyone was trying not to use the words, there was a lot of people that inadvertently used the word. So it's sort of like, we're going to try not to use the D word because it just, in my opinion, the word drone should only be used for large United States Air Force fighters that have been converted to be shot down by missiles. That's always been my image of a drone.
So that was from episode one.
boy, did we fail at that.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's very interesting that I think that you may be a professional and have definitions for a terminology that you use as a professional, but in the end, what counts, I guess, is what the public uses for terminology and how it defines it. And the public, the press, all used the word drone. And it was kind of tough at first, don't you think, David, when we were talking about these things in terms of trying to get people to understand that we were talking about, you know, applications other than the military?
Absolutely. It's funny, though, we've talked over time that now every time the word drone is used, it turns out to be a picture of a DJI Phantom.
That's right.
As a quad. We've gone to the opposite extremes. It's been a fun ride. If you and I, when we did episode zero, thought we were going to do 100 episodes, we would have told you you were kind of nuts. But our listeners have been amazing. We've had some amazing guests. Drone Mama does a great job every week. We can't do it without her. It's been fun. And you and I, we have to admit, we've learned a lot.
Well, that's kind of the hallmark of this podcast in many ways. When we started this out, we didn't proclaim ourselves to be experts on unmanned aircraft by really any stretch of the imagination. We had a great interest in them, and we certainly have some aviation knowledge, some manned aviation knowledge, but this was as new to us as it was to everybody else. So the UAV Digest is kind of the story of a journey of a new technology, a new industry, what have you. And in that regard, I think it's been really exciting. We've seen a lot of things come into this space in terms of research, in terms of development, new products, new software, and of course, government regulation.
Oh, absolutely. And our community has grown also. If we talk about that, I just looked, and as of right now, we have 13,030 Twitter followers on our UAV Digest Twitter account and our Facebook account. And of course, we have the UAV Digest Slack listener team, where we see all sorts of conversations and we learn from people who are in the industry. It's kind of amazing that we're regarded as experts, but we're always learning from everybody else.
Yeah, we're all learning from everybody else. That's for sure. And yeah, you're right. That does make it very exciting. And you find yourself wondering what's going to happen next all the time, you know, from week to week. We don't know what's going to happen next. And it's a never-ending process. In episode 100, we looked back at what we had been talking about, the topics that had come up, and we also looked ahead. But some of the topics that we thought we'd be looking at in the future in that episode 100, which was in June 2015, we thought next steps in the rulemaking process was a topic that we were going to be talking a lot about. And of course, we did. We were watching the FAA kind of come to grips with rules for unmanned aircraft in the process that they have to go through in order to do that.
Is this the point where I'm saying if I knew that I was going to be getting a law degree by doing this podcast, I would have told you we're nuts?
That's right. There's so many issues that became important. Legal issues, privacy issues, things like that. I remember we used to fret over the time it was taking, or it seemed to be taking the FAA to come up with rules that everybody could operate under, because a lot of the drive for this is commercial applications. And the industry sees all these opportunities to use unmanned aircraft as part of their business plan, but are hampered and prevented from proceeding because of the lack of regulations. And we just kept begging for faster speed in terms of getting to those regulations. We made slow progress, I guess, but that's the way the system works.
But it wasn't just RFAA here in the States. We've talked about regulations from Australia, New Zealand, Great Britain, Canada, the EU. We've touched on all of those nations and their different and unique ways of handling pretty much the same problem, right?
That's right. Problems of do you register drones? Do you register drone operators? Are they operators or are they pilots? How do you manage their interaction in the airspace with manned aircraft and whatever else is up there? We've seen different countries grapple with issues of privacy, and they've taken different approaches to that depending on how privacy is viewed in their country. So, yeah, it's the same, pretty much the same base issues globally, but we see different approaches to resolving those.
And we've talked about whether they were pilots or operators, and the person who we thought most of all hated UAVs, actually on our co-host, Rob, actually got his amendment for his certificate, as well as our other co-host, Max Trescott. So in a warp sort of way, we've sort of converted the unconvertible. What do you think?
Yes, we did see that a lot of rather manned pilots were really apprehensive about drones flying up in, I'll use the word there with air quotes, airspace. And I think legitimately, I mean, if you've got your small airplane and you're a private pilot flying, you really need to worry about being struck by any kind of an object, and introducing clouds of drones up into the airspace is not a very appealing thought. But I think there's been a lot of awareness. We still see, of course, a lot of bad behavior. I think almost every episode, David, we see some bad behavior with drones.
We have a Your Grounded segment that I sort of casually have brought up on, but in all fairness, some of those, quote, collisions, unquote, were, you know, one of them I remember was it was going to be the very first collision between it, and we were informed that the collision, evidently the drone had feathers
right
in its wings. So it was a bird strike. But we've seen the incidents rise up. We've seen, I mean, if you want to talk bad behavior, we've seen drones being used to smuggle drugs into prisons and narcotics. We've seen them smuggle them across the border between the United States and Mexico. And we've seen things like drones being flown over fires, which we've had a lot of, where they, you know, wildfires, where the drones have prevented the firefighters from being able to do their aerial firefighting. So we've covered a lot of bad behavior, but we've covered a lot of good behavior too.
And it seems to be increasing. One area that I can think of is news gathering. And as I watch the news, local news, national news, I see more and more video that almost certainly was shot from a drone. The news organizations seem to have really started to embrace it. We see a lot of potential with things like precision agriculture, also things like inspections. There's a lot of activity going on there. The one commercial area that seems to be moving the slowest, I guess, is I try to think of what that might be, is a package delivery. Yeah.
We'd like to thank Mr. Bezos for putting us on the package delivery Amazon tour. And ironically, at Udvar Hazy, Amazon had one of their package delivery drones there live for you to talk about.
Yes, they were at the tail end of the space shuttle. Actually, they had a table set up there, and they had the drone that you, I think, see most often in the photos in the news stories. And in my conversation with them, I learned that actually Amazon has a fleet, really, of different types of drones. They're not looking at just one single drone that's applicable to all package delivery kinds of environments. They have, I think he said, about a dozen of them, different types. So depending on, you know, a variety of environmental factors, they have different drones that are specific to those purposes. I asked at the table there what the participants at this event asked about package delivery by drone. And his response was to say that the question, well, first of all, people would ask, how does this work? And he would explain that the vision is that Amazon would be able to deliver, I think it was 80% of its packages, you know, within 30 minutes. And the second question that people asked him was, how soon can I get that? People is really like that idea. So it sounds like there's certainly a lot of pull from the general public for package delivery. Still lots of issues to work out, of course.
I think one of the joys that we get out of this show is we don't really feel constrained to talk just about UAVs. We like all of the congruent technology that are with them that have grown out of fuel cells come to mind from my co-host, but also things like we've talked about persistent satellites and how Facebook wants to use drones to provide internet. Or we've talked about the varying technologies like submersibles. We've talked about underwater vehicles, unmanned underwater vehicles, and autonomous cars. All of those things seem to blend together into the technologies, but it is fun for us to talk about something new that it's not necessarily on the UAV track, but it's automated or unmanned. What do you think, Max?
Yes, they do kind of blend together, like you say. Autonomous vehicles, whether they're land, sea, or air, still common technologies, common issues, things to be resolved. So for that reason, I think it's kind of short-sighted to just focus on unmanned aircraft, though we do focus on it, but I should say we wouldn't want to focus solely on that because of these interactions, with other applications and technologies. They kind of all come together in many ways. But David, what do you think that are some of the things that we'll be talking about in the next 100 episodes?
Batteries, batteries, and batteries.
Power
plants, and it's going to be a challenge. Regulation will never go away. I know that. We were, I think by now, supposed to be dealing with beyond visual line of sight, which we need for package delivery.
Yeah, I think that's a big area that we'll be talking about in the next 100 episodes because it enables so many other things. Obviously, package delivery, but some precision agriculture applications and many others where if we have the ability to allow beyond visual line of sight for commercial applications, it just opens up so much. But yeah, for package delivery, without that, without beyond visual line of sight, you can't do package delivery.
And beyond visual line of sight, one of the things that has come up over the last 200 episodes that I don't even think Max and I would have even dreamed of was drone racing and our remotely piloted vehicle racing and how that technology has exploded.
That's going to be very interesting to watch, I think. It's hard for me to predict how big that will become, how popular that will become. I think it's got the opportunity to be big if for no other reason than the fact that, you know, if you have a device with a motor and it moves, people are going to race it. Right. So, I mean, everything is raced, and drone racing, of course, can be very spectacular, very interesting to watch. The skills of some of these pilots is just amazing reaction speeds that, David, I haven't seen for 30 years in myself.
And let's talk a little bit more about that and the fact that over one of the reasons why we started this was we were talking so much about drones on Airplane Geeks, and such negativity was coming from our listeners about, oh, God, they're going off on talking about drones again. Max and David have had it. But now think about this. AOPA, we've had the head of the AOPA, the American Pilots Association, and they've invited drone pilots to join their organizations.
Yes.
EAA, Experimental Aircraft Association, at Oshkosh every year now, has a drone cage, and pilots are interacting with drone pilots, and they're learning skills from each other, and we never would have expected that, I don't think.
But it does make sense. I mean, if you're a manned aviation pilot, or if you're in that industry, you want to be interested in unmanned as well. You can't just divorce yourself from it. I think the impact on you is so great that you need to understand it and take a look at it. But also, I mean, it's just another form of aviation on one level. And as AOPA has said, and others as well, I think, David, even you have used the term gateway drug. Drones are a great gateway drug for aviation in general, for manned aviation, getting youngsters interested in, well, whether it's RC flying or flying quadcopters or, you know, whatever it is.
Or flying.
Or flying. It's all part of the same thing, the same process.
And we have schools like Embry-Riddle. Yeah. Talking about, you know, where they have full curriculums, University of North Dakota, full UAV curriculums. I keep wondering when I'm going to get a call for a UAV historian, but it's kind of funny, you know, and we mentioned Roger Connor, who is the curator for vertical flight and UAVs, and the large UAV presence now at the Smithsonian. You know, they actually have a DJI Phantom. And that was the first one that did a package delivery with drugs. I went to NASA Langley, and we talked about the autonomy incubator and autonomy and teaching drones to become autonomous vehicles, not just remotely piloted vehicles. So the education has grown so much that, you know, we've been very lucky. We did this at the right time to watch the waves go by, and we got excited and disturbed and questioned registration, and the FAA put it together in less than 30 days and moved it into production, and millions of people registered, and now it's going away because it was not legal. We went through the whole cycle. We went from the beginning to the middle to the end. And still do the show.
I think some of the other topics that we'll be talking about in upcoming episodes, certainly traffic management, something that NASA is working on and others as well. That's an area that I think we're going to see a lot of development. Security, the general notion of hacking into UAVs, unmanned aircraft, either for sport, if you will, or as a defensive measure. I think that's going to be a topic that will be getting attention.
And one of the things that we've learned over the years is for every drone, there's an equal and opposite anti-drone program.
Right. I think privacy is an issue that is still kind of open in many regions. I think we'll see a lot of conversation about that.
But we've been pretty consistent on privacy, that there are privacy laws. There doesn't need to be drone privacy laws. I think you and I have been pretty consistent on that from the beginning.
Yes. Politicians, elected officials tend to see an issue or have an issue brought before them and react to that issue specifically, which is why I think we are starting to see more and more drone privacy laws that are specific to drones. So that's going to be an area that I think will be interesting to watch. Also, who has the ability to regulate the airspace, especially at very low altitudes. Is that still the FAA? Do they regulate to the blades of grass, or do local governments, towns, states, regions, whatever, have the ability to set their own rules for operating drones at low altitudes over residences and all of that?
And of course, we're going to look to the state of Connecticut to show how you can weaponize drones and flamethrowers and guns. You know, that state of Connecticut, those radicals up there.
Yeah, we've got one particular teenager that seems to be in the press a lot over those issues.
What was one of your what was one of your favorite stories?
Oh, favorite stories? Boy, it's hard to pick one.
You know what one of mine is?
What?
And it was a very early one. When we had the team that was dealing with using UAVs to work with kids with autism.
I thought that was
of some of the things that we've talked about. We've always tried to aspire to show the good side of drones. And I think that was one of those things. Of course, we've met a Kashmir princess doing this show, haven't we?
Princess Aliyah Pandolfi, yes, the great work she's doing with the Kashmir Foundation to bring drones, unmanned aircraft, quadcopter technology to youngsters, and not just youngsters, but especially youngsters. I think that's the best part of the story.
And don't forget conservation, you know, saving sea turtles and wildlife. I mean, we've had a lot of really cool stories, you know. And of course, we've had a lot of good videos of the week, you know, from whales to, if you want to go to the opposite end of the spectrums, birds that are attacking other quadcopters. You know, we've had humorous. And, you know, this year at the Super Bowl, we had drones, which was part of the halftime show.
Right.
You can't make them any more normal than that if they're showing up in the halftime of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you've got Intel doing a lot of work there. You've got Disney looking at applications. It just, the list goes on and on and on. But I think one other thing that we'll certainly be talking a lot about coming up is the regulatory landscape. In fact, we have some news, David, concerning the FAA reauthorization bill. And we have bills that have been introduced into both houses of the U.S. Congress in the last week or so that have some difference. For those of you who, either just don't know or are not living in the United States, the way this works is that Congress authorizes the FAA, which gives them funding and also gives them I've called them marching orders. It lays out some requirements for what the FAA is expected to accomplish. And these bills get introduced in both the House and the Senate independently. They go through a process in those two legislative bodies where they arrive at a consensus and vote on it and then pass it to the other party. So the Senate has its bill, the House has its bill.
Then they get together, have some beers, and try to figure out how to blend the two together.
Right. So right now we have two different bills. The Senate has introduced 1405, the FAA Reauthorization Act of 2017. And there are some specific drone-related aspects in this bill as it's been proposed to this point. It directs the FAA to create a rule for micro drones, those being under 4.4 pounds. It also requires the U.S. Department of Transportation to establish a delivery air carrier certificate that would allow package deliveries by drones. They also authorize the FAA to issue more exemptions for beyond visual line of sight. Now, these are all proposals in this bill, so this isn't accomplished yet. David, some of the other things that are in the Senate proposal, in the Senate bill?
Well, there's privacy and safety issues. This one's going to be interesting. Criminalizes reckless drone behavior around manned aircraft and runways.
Mm.
You know, we, and with that boost enforcement, we, you know, we, the FAA does not have a very large enforcement capability right now. And so that's interesting that they're trying to put more money into enforcement. There's a catch-all that says create new opportunities for testing and promoting innovative usage. Now, one of those big deals that we've talked about over the last 4 years were the UAS test sites that were created, and for a while there were sort of stagnant after they were authorized. So in this case, the Senate's giving money, and hopefully they'll get filtered to the test sites.
And also the Senate bill authorizes FAA drone registration. So that from the court case, from the judge's ruling that we talked about recently that struck down the ability of the FAA to require registration for, quote, model aircraft, the Senate bill authorizes the FAA to actually conduct a registration process. So that's kind of an overview of the Senate bill. The House bill is different. This is H.R. 2997, and they have a more flowery name. The Senate bill, as I mentioned, is the FAA Reauthorization Act of 2017. The House bill is called the 21st Century Aviation Innovation Reform and Reauthorization Act, or the AIRR Act, A-I-R-R, for Aviation Innovation Reform and Reauthorization. One of the things that it does that the Senate bill does not is that it privatizes air traffic control, which, of course, is a big, big issue in the manned aviation community. But there are some spillover effects that we can only begin to imagine, I think, at this point for the unmanned industry. But besides that, instead of requiring drone registration under the House bill, the Department of Transportation is directed to assess the registration system. It requires the FAA to, quote, develop and track metrics to assess compliance with and effectiveness of the system. So that's a kind of a stand back a little bit approach. They also propose what's called, quote, a streamlined process for the FAA to permit the operation of small UAS for certain uses, and also a risk-based permitting process for operations.
And they want an air carrier certificate also for UAS delivery, which is kind of good. It mandates rulemaking for a UAS traffic management system. That's kind of interesting because they want rules about traffic management, but they're going to privatize ATC. So it's sort of interesting that they want to set up the rules before they let somebody else privatize the system, which is different. And they want to grant waivers for low-risk UTM operations. So they're a little bit more liberal than the Senate in one way and more conservative in the other. And what will happen is if these two things get approved, they'll have to be a blending. And the biggest challenge out of all of this probably is the privatization of air traffic control.
Yes.
That will be a challenge for everybody, from the Alphabet's organizations that are in aviation to, I'm sure even the drone organizations will start getting involved with that because it's going to be a fee management system or a fee basis system is something I'm sure that we're going to touch on over the next 6 months to a year.
Yeah, it's a very contentious issue. And if that, you know, if that difficulty prevents the Congress from reaching a conclusion before the FAA reauthorization, the current reauthorization, runs out, then most likely what will happen is a continuing resolution, which means that everything is frozen at, or well, stays the same as it is now. Funding is available, but everything else does not change. So the point is that the argument, the debate over privatizing air traffic control could cause all these other positive, I'll call them positive, provisions that affect unmanned aviation. It could push all of those out. So that's the risk that we face.
So we'll see. Stay tuned. I'm sure that it will be talking about this on episode 300. So, Max, I guess at this point, I just want to say thank you. We record this on Thursday nights, and I know for in my life, with some of the challenges I've had, this has been one of those saving graces. No matter how bad the day at work is on Thursday nights, I get to see and talk to my friend Max Flight. And we talk about something we love, and we learn so much every week.
It's kind of therapeutic in some ways for both of us. So we enjoy doing that. We're also blessed by having all of you, the audience, those of you that listen to the UAV Digest, those of you that send us emails, that contribute your thoughts in our Slack listener team, on our Facebook page, on Twitter. It's an amazing community of professionals, enthusiasts, and just people that have interest in unmanned aviation. And we really, really appreciate you allowing us to come into your earbuds or your speakers or however you listen to us. So with that, again, you've been listening to episode 200 of the UAV Digest. We're at the UAVDigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, you've probably learned the key by now. You can go straight to the UAVDigest.com/200. There you'll find the show notes.
And of course, we want you to join our listener team on Slack. So send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. Come join us and grow the conversation. We sort of been starting to reach critical mass with the Slack team that it's starting to pick up, and the train has left the station. There's more interesting conversations, and they're getting in depth. And it's diehards, our intense listeners, and you can learn a lot. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/theuavdigest. And of course, UAVDigest @UAVDigest on Twitter. You can become part of our Patreon account, or you can buy some swag at our Cafe Press store. But most of all, we'd love for you to leave some feedback to Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play, and tell them that you enjoy listening to us so other people can find us, so that we can continue doing this for another 100 episodes. We don't know what's going to happen, but we're going to enjoy the ride, and we'll bring guests to you. And again, like Max said, thank you for spending a half hour of your week with us every week. We enjoy doing it.
And also, we'd like to give special thanks to our sponsors, Go Engineer and UAV Propulsion Tech. They've really been able to help us out a lot with funding this, server fees, hosting fees, equipment costs, things like that. It's been really wonderful to have Go Engineer and UAV Propulsion Tech support this podcast in that way. We really appreciate it. So thanks to you guys.
And the other thing is, when you go to our website, check out the conventions that we've been supporting via our media back and forth. And if you do go to a convention and you know, if you learned about it via us, please let them know, because it's an important way for us to communicate back and forth with all of you out there. So I guess on that note, I will say happy anniversary to us. This is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.